And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Welcome, everybody. Another episode of Move the Sticks with you live from Las Vegas today, on site here at the 97th annual East-West Shrine Bowl. Day three of practices in the books here from Allegiant Stadium. East and West teams working through one more day of practices and then hit the field for the game in prime time on NFL Network. Rhett Lewis, Bucky Brooks here watching practices today. We're going to get to the East-West Shrine game here in a little bit, Buck, but obviously big headlines of the day. And we got the Super Bowl 56 matchup set, and it's Bengals and Rams. And it comes really in dramatic fashion from the way these two conference championship games the way they shook out. And we're going to get to some of the coaching and general manager hires too here in a little bit. But let's start right there with the AFC championship game. Chiefs jump out to the early lead, right? 21-3. Looked like they were going to run away with it. Then the Bengals hold them to just 3 points the rest of the way. What happened in that second half that slowed the Chiefs down?
You know, Red, it's one of the more remarkable games that I've ever watched. The Kansas City Chiefs were having their way with the game. I mean, they had, look, four drives, their first four drives, they were going 70-plus yards. And, look, on the precipice of being able to score another touchdown to really put the game out of – I mean, put the game out of reach. Yeah. That doesn't happen. And what it does is, man, it jump-started the momentum for the Cincinnati Bengals. I felt like from that point on, Pat Mahomes did not play well. And I feel like some of the things that we saw – him struggle with early in the year, things that we thought that he had resolved midway in the year, the patience, the discipline, the willingness to take the underneath, the check down, not necessarily trying to force the big play. He reverted to some old behaviors, and that came back to bite them in the butt. I want to say he was 8-for-16 for only 55 yards, two touchdowns in the second half.
Two picks.
I mean, just not the kind of performance that we expected to see. And give the Bengals credit on defense. They got after him, four-man rush. Did a good job of staying in max coverage, man, and zone. They did not let the ball fly over their head. And because of that, and because Pat Mahomes did not play a very disciplined game, it gave them an opportunity to win it. And they were able to win in overtime.
And you were talking about that along the lines of the Bengals defense. We were talking about down here on the sidelines watching these guys play and the type of player they went after, which kind of allowed them to run the scheme that they wanted with Lou Anarumo and the style of play that they wanted on defense with the guys like Trey Hendrickson coming over, the drafting of Sam Hubbard, those type of players.
Yeah, look, this is a team that plays blue-collar defense, and they're able to do that because they have a bunch of blue-collar guys. Even their marquee free agent signing, Trey Hendrickson, was a blue-collar, high-effort, nonstop motor guy when he was at New Orleans. He's continued to be that in Cincinnati. Sam Hubbard was a guy that I really liked when he was in the draft coming out of Ohio State. He continues to play hard. His ability to get two sacks on that last drive to kind of knock them out and force them to kick a field goal, that was big time for the Bengals. And then the way they've patched together the secondary, Jesse Bates being good, Von Bell coming as a free agent signing, picking up Eli Apple, Mike Hilton coming from the Pittsburgh Steelers. A lot of these guys fit the mold, and because they all are kind of the same kind of guy, it has been easy to establish that culture on defense in Cincinnati.
Biggest interception of Von Bell's career coming there in overtime of Patrick Mahomes, who threw two interceptions in the second half and OT, which was one more than the total number of interceptions he had thrown in every championship game he had played in up until this point. A very uncharacteristic Patrick Mahomes like second half, and it comes back and bites the Chiefs, and the Bengals are moving on to the Super Bowl for the first time since 1988, and they will meet the Los Angeles Rams, who exercise some demons of their own in the NFC championship game, coming back from a 10-point fourth quarter deficit to beat a team who had beaten them six straight times in the San Francisco 49ers and getting it done at the end. Matthew Stafford, Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham, big reason why they're moving on.
Yeah, star power. The star power of the Rams really showed up, and it's one of the reasons why Les Snead and Sean McVay were committed to bringing over stars. You look at how that game played out, it was the stars that really dominated and took over. Offensively, Matthew Stafford was on his game. Look, he got away with a few bad balls that could have been costly interceptions, but when you look at the entirety of that game, he did a really good job of getting it to his playmakers. Cooper Kupp, Odell Beckham Jr., both of those guys go over 100 yards. Defensively, Von Miller didn't register a sack, but he and Aaron Donald and Leonard Floyd, guys who were pickups within the last 2 years, have been able to really dominate. And so the pressure that they were able to put on Jimmy Garoppolo when it mattered in the fourth quarter really made the difference. And so when we think about this team advancing to the Super Bowl and the stars that they have, man, if you're Sean McVay, you feel great about the position that you're in, because in those games where you need your stars to play at their best, their stars showed up, and you would hope that they would show up again in the Super Bowl.
No question. You mentioned the pressure. I mean, the pressure on Jimmy Garoppolo at the end on that final drive for San Francisco was overwhelming. And then we saw the errant pass, you know, just trying to get the ball out of his hands and not take a sack at the end, resulting in the interception that essentially sealed the win for the LA Rams. They move on 20-17 winners over the 49ers. So it's a Rams-Bengals Super Bowl from SoFi. So for the second straight season, we'll have a team that played their home game in the Super Bowl site get to play there in the Super Bowl. Pretty cool, after never having seen that happen in NFL history before last year with the Tampa Bay Bucks. So pretty neat opportunity, and we'll continue to preview that matchup here over the course of the next 2 weeks as we get set for Super Bowl 56. Also starting to see a lot of these head coaching and GM vacancies get filled. And look, we saw Brian Daboll get hired by his buddy Joe Shane, and now we have a part of that Bills philosophy now heading over to Eastern New York. The New York Giants. We're seeing some other moves being made right here in Vegas. The reported moves of Dave Ziegler coming over from New England, bringing Josh McDaniels with him to run this Raiders franchise. A lot of intriguing moves. Which one of these head coaching or GM hires has you kind of most interested in how they're going to transform their organizations?
Look, the Chicago Bears and what they've been able to do pairing Ryan Poles with Matt Eberflus. Because I think about Chicago and I think about the Windy City and the tradition of the organization. It is about the defense. It is about playing hard. It's about being physical. It's about playing a certain brand of football in Chicago. And when I think about Matt Eberflus and what he's been able to do as a defensive coordinator for the Indianapolis Colts, that style works. And when he counts his centers of influence, or the people that are most influential in his coaching style, he talks about Rod Marinelli, who served as the defensive coordinator under Lovie Smith in Chicago. And if you go back, you remember those defenses and how hard they played and the amount of turnovers that they were able to create because of the hustle and because of the really the intent and the obsession with turning the ball over. I'm curious to see that. When you hear him talk in his opening press, he said, "Hey, guys, I would tell our guys to get their track shoes on because we're going to do a lot of running. And they are going to run to the ball. They're going to hustle. And they're going to do a really good job on defense. And what can they do to get the quarterback on track?" Justin Fields. A lot of times people don't like the thought of a defensive-minded head coach.
Don't worry. He ain't going to be in the meeting room with him.
No, ushering in some of the things when it comes to breaking in the young quarterback. But I will say, look at what Sean McDermott has been able to do in Buffalo with Josh Allen. Some of the tips that a defensive-minded coach can give the quarterback can unlock their potential. I'm looking forward to seeing what they're able to do with Justin Fields in Chicago.
You mentioned New York and with Buffalo, you know, and how they were able to really refine Josh Allen's skills and turn him into one of the elite quarterbacks in this league and really transform that franchise as a result. And now Brian Daboll heads to New York, where he's got a quarterback. Look, he's not Josh Allen, but he's got some similar skills. He doesn't have Josh Allen's arm, but he's got some of that mobility. And we've seen that with Daniel Jones. And it's, I mean, I thought it was one of the more interesting quotes I've ever heard from an owner was John Mara, very honestly telling the media, "We have done everything possible to screw this kid up," in Daniel Jones, talking about the lack of consistency in coaching with the offensive coordinator changes, the head coaching changes. And now again, with a franchise in turnover, Joe Shane, now the GM, Brian Daboll, now the head coach. You think Daboll can have a similar effect on Jones like he did with Brian, with Josh Allen in Buffalo?
Absolutely, he can have that effect. But I think we have to be patient, because John Mara talked about all the things they've done to mess up Daniel Jones. Well, now you have to retrain Daniel Jones to get him to play the way that you want to play. Here's what I'll say about Daniel Jones. Coming out of Duke, he's one of the best athletes that we've seen at the quarterback position. He's a guy who is crafty as a runner. We've seen the big plays that he's made with his legs during his time in New York. I would say as a passer, no, he does not have the arm talent of a Josh Allen, but he is a very effective passer. The biggest thing that he's had to be able to do is to learn how to take care of the ball, not turn it over, don't give it away. Because if he takes care of the ball with his athleticism and his playmaking ability, he absolutely could be a special player in New York. I can't wait to see what Brian Daboll does, because Daboll's creativity unlocked Josh Allen. So why can't he take that same creativity and find a way to maximize Daniel Jones' potential? He also talked about not only Daniel Jones, but keep in mind, Saquon Barkley. Maybe he can get both of the Giants star players to play like stars going forward.
Kenny Golladay, Sterling Shepard, Kadarius Toney. talented group of targets out there for Daniel Jones. If now if Daboll can help put it all together, will of course be the key. Maybe they'll find some guys out here at the East-West Shrine Game that could help supplement that Bills offense and that Giants offense, rather, as Daboll makes the move from Western New York to Eastern New York. And our takeaways from these first few practices here at the East-West Shrine Bowl in Las Vegas right after this. All right, back here with you on Move the Sticks, Rhett Lewis, Bucky Brooks. No DJ today. He is en route to Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, which, of course, you can see here on NFL Network on Saturday and catch all the practice recaps on NFL Network each night, Tuesday through Thursday. We are wrapping up the practice week here at the East-West Shrine Bowl. Day three of practice is now in the books, and there has been an overwhelming consensus on the star of the week. And that's been UCLA's Kyle Phillips, wide receiver who has led the Bruins in receiving each of the last 3 years. In fact, the first receiver to do that in some 15 years for the Bruins. And I don't know if he's lost a rep out here, Bucky, especially in one-on-ones. He has been virtually uncoverable.
He has been unguardable. And one of the things that you look for with wide receivers is the craft. It's the craftsmanship that they bring to the table. And he is an outstanding route runner. His tempo, his misdirection and deception when it comes to what he does at the top of the route, his separation ability with his quickness, it all stands out. And because he has been able to really win every rep in one-on-one and even taking it to team, he is someone that scouts are really going to be high on when they go back through this process. The ability to find a receiver who is a dependable and consistent playmaker who is able to get open versus any and all coverages, man, it gives you a huge advantage. It's one of the reasons why I think people can view him as a nice number three or number four receiver in the rotation.
Yeah, and I had a chance to catch up with him after this last practice here and was just talking to him about, you know, his offense at UCLA. And he was like, man, it was really hard early on to learn everything that Chip Kelly asked of us because he does put a lot on his players and they run at a tempo and they got a lot on their plates. And he was like, look, it's actually really served me well. I'm glad I went through that and had the opportunity to learn that way because now out here I'm learning this NFL playbook and I'm picking it up. Lickety split. And I'm teaching it to other guys. And so it's really allowed him the opportunity to immerse himself here at this East-West Shrine Game. And then I also asked him about some of his influences on the NFL level. And, you know, he brought up guys like Cole Beasley and Hunter Renfrow. Easy to draw those comparisons with their ability in the slot. And their similar stature as a smaller guy. Phillips kind of like that with Renfrow and with Beasley. But he was really detailed in what he liked about each one of those guys' games. He was talking about how intentional they are with every move, with their eyes, with their head as they're running routes and no wasted movements. Talked about how he's trying to use that little skip step that Keenan Allen has when he's at the top of his routes, or the split stance kind of get off that Devontae Adams uses to get off the line and bump coverage. Two of the very best out there. So this is a guy who knows what he wants to be at the NFL level, studying the right way, and he's putting it out, putting the right kind of tape out there for NFL evaluators out here in the Shrine Game. One position that's really stood out, though, above all the rest, seemingly been the tight ends from both squads. I've got a really interesting character from Ohio, Armani Rogers. You played with his dad, Sam Rogers, in Buffalo, Bucky. Never played tight end, but he's playing tight end in this game. He's a quarterback at UNLV, transferred to Ohio, caught two career passes coming in here, so he's really just learning the position. And he's starting to catch on. And we've seen that happen in the NFL with guys like Tyree Jackson with Philly, with Logan Thomas in Washington. Yeah. And then on the west side, a more traditional tight end in Jelani Woods, big, tall, 6'7", 250-pound tight end who was primarily used as a blocker at Oklahoma State, then transferred to UVA and really exploded as a receiver.
Yeah, when you think about Rodgers first, Rodgers is, man, the big body playmaker that everybody wants in the middle of your offense. Someone that can expand the strike zone, that can run all the dirty routes over the middle of the field, but is also a consistent and reliable red zone weapon. Already, even though he's new to position, Rodgers has shown the ability to be able to do all of those things. And when you think about bringing a quarterback mindset to the position, understanding sight adjustments, changing coverage in the post-snap phase, being able to do different things on option routes. He understands it because he played quarterback. He knows exactly what quarterbacks would look for. And then you talk about other tight ends in this game. Jelani Woods, big tight end from Virginia, being able to really expand the strike zone with his size and his length. He's been one of the standouts of the week. He is another one that we will continue to talk about in the run-up to the draft.
Quarterbacks, you're going to recognize a lot of these guys. Jack Cohn from Notre Dame, Brock Purdy from Iowa State, Skylar Thompson from Kansas State, De'Aaron King from Miami, who might have a little positional versatility in his tool bag. I think we might get him working with some of the receivers, maybe the returners, as he has a phenomenal athletic ability. You've also got a guy like E.J. Perry from Brown, who's really stood out. In fact, when I was talking to Kyle Phillips, he was like, yo, that quarterback from Brown can sling it.
Ripping it. Yeah. He was ripping it earlier today down in the red zone. We saw him toss two or three touchdowns in between multiple defenders. His ability to fit the ball in the mailbox to string it into that tight window speaks volumes not only about his arm strength, but about his ability to anticipate and get the ball where he needs to right in those open windows.
So some of the standouts there from day three and the first 3 days of practice, one more day of practice, then we get to game time Thursday. And when we come back here on Move the Sticks, I'll look at what this opportunity could provide these prospects as they make their march down the path to the draft right here in Vegas at the end of April. All right, back here on Move the Sticks, Rhett Lewis, Bucky Brooks. It is All-Star season. NFLPA game is done. You were on the call there with Matt Money Smith. Had some really, really interesting performances there. We're seeing some really intriguing players here at the East-West game. The Senior Bowl is kicking off in earnest here tomorrow with the first practice leading up until game time on Saturday. Give us a sense, Bucky, just like what these All-Star games kind of provide the opportunity for some of these prospects trying to make a name for themselves.
Well, I haven't been taught in the business for a long time. Some of the Hall of Fame evaluators would tell you All-Star game performance can never hurt you. It can only help you because it's a different environment. And every scout understands that this is a new and challenging environment for the players that are participating. What you're trying to see is how quickly do they assimilate into a new team? How quickly do they pick up the nuances of the playbook? What kind of impact can they make when they have their opportunity to play? You want to see that. And because we have the varying levels of competition, sometimes you'll see these two guys go against these FCS guys go against big school guys. And sometimes you'll see guys who are playing different positions take on top players on the other side of the ball. And you want to see, like, how do they compete? How do they handle being on the big stage? Do they shrink when the lights are on or do they step up? It's not necessarily about the mistakes. It's about the competitiveness. You're trying to assess some of these things when you get a chance to watch them in person.
All right. The 97th annual East-West Shrine Game, NFL Network, Thursday night in primetime, 8 p.m. Eastern. And then on Saturday, it is the Senior Bowl down in Mobile. DJ will be there. We'll have some updates from the week of practice here as we continue down this road here on Move the Sticks. Thanks so much for being with us here on this episode. Back with you later this week.